This is a 720 to go podcast from Chicago's WGN Radio 720.
This podcast is sponsored by ADM.
As one of the world's largest agricultural processors, ADM is uniquely positioned to serve the world's growing needs for abundant food and renewable energy. ADM.
When it comes to the business of America's farmland, you need the information from the people who know it best. That's why we bring you AgriCast with Orion Samuelson and Max Armstrong.
And a good morning to you, Roger. Good morning, world. Wherever you are listening to us on WGN Radio this morning. And that's all over the world, really, because this weekend, or I should say the Thursday of this week when we put our TV show together, we had a couple from Brussels, Belgium, who watch and listen to us regularly talking agriculture, and they're spending about 3 weeks here at farm shows and things of that type. So wherever you are in the world, good morning and a good weekend ahead, we hope. And as you heard earlier, that my weekend, right after I say farewell at 6 o'clock this morning, we'll be in the car heading up I-90 to Sparta, Wisconsin. We get off there and go to Westby, the Norwegian capital of Wisconsin. And today it'll be an all-class reunion for the Ontario High School. That my graduating class was 23 back in 1952, and the total enrollment at the high school was 96 people. It's now, like so many schools, consolidated, but they have an all-class reunion, and it's always fun to get back and compare notes. And then tomorrow, it's the family reunion to say hello, as we do once a year, to many people and friends. So that will be our weekend, and we hope whatever you have planned, it goes well for you. We're certainly looking forward to ours. We're at 8 minutes after 5 o'clock now here on the Saturday morning show, and weather is really a topic of conversation, not only among farmers, but certainly among traders. And we're looking at a forecast now that says we're going to get very hot for the next week or so over at least the western half of the Corn Belt, and maybe more. So we'll talk about that. Max Armstrong will be here to talk with Jim McCormick. Jim is a market analyst with Allendale, based in McHenry, Illinois, and he'll be also talking about the weather factor in the market. So stay with us here on this Saturday morning and find out what you should be doing with your lawns and trees and gardens as far as watering, fertilizing, and harvesting. Jim Fazell will be joining us to discuss those topics when we continue here on the Saturday morning show. Time to say good morning to Jim Fazell, our specialist in ornamental horticulture, who always keeps us posted on what's going on. And Jim, it's hard to believe that we're already 2 months into the garden growing season.
Isn't that something? Orion, before we start talking about that, we had a delightful visit down to Kankakee County a little bit earlier this past week for the 50th wedding anniversary for some longtime listeners and wonderful farm people in Kankakee County, Carol and Suds Zellhart. We've known them about 40 years, and they've been married 50. So I just wanted to give them a how you doing and congratulate them. So
now, well, I've heard you talk about them before, but and you've always been saying good things. So I'll add my congratulations, too.
Yeah, they're good folks. You know, you don't find very many farm people that aren't, and they're just wonderful people. Well, we do need to talk about the garden. There are a lot of things been going on, and you said 2 months is right. That's hard to believe, and it seemed like the season had a tough time getting going, and weather's taken its toll on a lot of things. It was too wet early and then too dry, and some people have had floods, and some people haven't had rain. They can see it off on the horizon. It never gets to them. So a lot of things that need to be done. One of the things we need to do is get out into the annual garden, and they should be looking great right now. If they're not at their peak right now, it's really unfortunate, because this is when they should be the best. One of the things we need to do right off the bat is get out there and support the tall annuals and perennials and the cutting garden, because especially when we have wind and rain, it tends to knock these things down, and we want them to be up where we can see them. This is especially important in the back of the garden, where they're kind of the background for some of the lower things, but you can tie them to stakes. We actually have a fence that we have behind our tall plants, and we use a little bit of baler twine out there and staple it to the fence and pull the staples out next year and start over again. Or caging will work just as well. And while you're out there, trim off all of the spent blooms on the things that are done flowering. And with things that are completely done flowering right now, before you forget what they are, doesn't hurt to put a label there to say, okay, these are the orange daylilies. We're going to move them in the fall. We want to remember that they're orange. So put a label out there. It won't be visible till the plants are cut down in the fall, but it'll be there so that when you want it, you'll be able to tell what's there and what was there, and you'll know what color it is. I've been in a situation where I got ready in the fall to move some stuff, and I could not remember what was what. I knew what they were, but couldn't tell what color they were. Anyway, that's something that can be done right now while you're thinking about it and while the flowers are still on there, so you can tell what you have. And when you're where you have spots that things have died off already, they've done flowering, things like bleeding hearts are done right now, and some of the little geraniums are done. Don't just let those places be vacant. There are annuals at the garden center still, a lot of them at bargain prices, and you can get these and plug them in, and they will grow very nicely and flower for you the rest of the season. I mentioned labels. Pests in the garden, one of the things just appearing right now is Japanese beetle. And of course, they can do a lot of damage if you have a lot of them. Get started on them as soon as you see them. Best thing to do with them is pick them off. They don't bite, they don't hurt, they don't smell. Pick them off if you can. And what you want to do is avoid early damage, because the damage attracts more beetles. If you can get rid of the first ones, there's a good chance you won't have any more. If you have a lot of them, you might need to do some spraying. And there are just a lot of things that will kill Japanese beetles, Cyfluthrin and Esfenvalerate, and they're sold at like Bayer Advanced, Bonite or Ortho Bug Be Gone. There are all kinds of things that will kill these. No excuse for letting them eat your plants up. Weeds are growing. Whether it rains or it doesn't rain, the weeds are always out there. Keep ahead of them by hoeing them out. Jane likes to pull them. I don't like to get down that far. I hoe them out. And when you go out in the evening and see how your plants are doing, take your hoe with you. If you see one of those ugly things rearing its head, right, hoe it out. Now, one other thing that's happening right now, we have a lot of mosquitoes just beginning. We didn't have a lot of trouble with the floodwater mosquitoes. I don't know why. But the little ones that they're sometimes called tree hole mosquitoes, because they'll go through their whole life cycle in a tin can that was left out or in your gutter if it doesn't drain right. But they're the kind that bite all day. They're small. You may not even see them, but they're dangerous because they carry diseases, including West Nile, which we don't need. And they carry some other things that we don't usually have around here. Protect yourself. First of all, don't go out early in the morning or late in the afternoon without some kind of protective clothes, wear long sleeves, long pants, and so forth. And anything that's exposed, certainly use DEET. That's just any of the mosquito preventative materials that contain the material that's DEET, and that's the initials of the chemical that's in that stuff. Out in the lawns, we're beginning to see some pests in the lawns. The sod webworms are flying right now. In a couple of weeks, apply 7. That will kill the grubs as they're hatching from the eggs, kill the larva from as they're hatching from the eggs. Grubs, this is the time to apply the grub preventative materials, and we're talking about the long-term things like Merit or Grubex and so forth. They need to be put down now because those grubs will hatch in about 4 weeks. That's how long it takes this stuff to become active. So put it down now. I always aim for the 4th of July to put down the grub-proofing materials, and this could be a good year for grubs. We didn't have a lot of them in the past couple of years, but we had a mild winter, and the adults lay eggs this time of year, but they grow through the season, come out in the spring. So they make it through the winter, and if we had a mild winter, you're going to have a lot of them making it through. So protect yourself. Anyway, there are a lot of things happening out there. Keep mowing your lawn. keep the grass at 2.5 inches tall. It might be important to consider watering if you're in an area where you get some water, but watering needs to be done out an inch every week or so, or when the grass begins to wilt. Just a lot of things to do, Orion. I could go on and talk about these things. Maybe the thing we need to do is tell people, if you've got a question, write to us, and we'll answer it on the air in a future week. But for right now, that's enough to keep people busy, and we hope that everybody is enjoying this summer. We wait all winter for this hot weather, so let's
You're
get on.
You're right, we
ahead.
Do, so we shouldn't complain too much. The one thing that I want to add to the water scene, it always bothers me to see people standing with hose in hand, waving back and forth to water the lawn. And that really is not good because it doesn't put down enough water. And so what? The roots turn around and start heading for water above them instead of below them?
That's it. They develop up at the surface, and then if you stop watering, they're struggling. That's real good to calm your nerves after a bad day, but it doesn't do the grass any good. Put the sprinkler out. Let it run until you have an inch of water. And I put out a can out there, just a good old coffee can, and when there's an inch of water in the bottom of the coffee can, then I turn the sprinkler off, and I know that whole area under the sprinkler has gotten pretty well near an inch.
Good deal. As always, we appreciate your expertise, my friend, and we look forward to our next visit.
Me too.
Jim Fazell, specialist in ornamental horticulture, here on the Saturday Morning Show. It's 21 and a half minutes after 5 o'clock here on this Saturday morning, the Saturday Morning Show on WGN Radio Chicago. Max Armstrong will be joining us in the second half of the show today to talk markets. But he did want me to remind you that next week we get underway with some of the great outdoor farm shows. The I&I Show, Historic Farm Days, will be going on at Penfield, Illinois this next week. Max will be there after Thursday. The show runs Thursday through Sunday, and he told me that my F-20 tractor, restored, will be displayed along with Max's Super H and 560. So I guess you can go see the tractor seats where Max sat as a kid growing up and where I sat as a kid growing up on the dairy farm in Wisconsin. Again, that's July 13th through Sunday the 16th, Thursday through Sunday, Penfield, Illinois, down in the Champaign area. So you may want to make plans to go down and talk to some of the people who restore these tractors and who get such pleasure out of doing that. Well, I talked about weather and the fact that it is indeed becoming more and more of a concern to traders and also to producers, of course. But here is the latest story that came in yesterday afternoon late on the weather situation for next week. Sizzling temperatures in the Northern Plains spring wheat belt will spread next week into parts of the western Midwest, and that will threaten the prospects for corn yields as the crop enters its key pollination phase, according to meteorologist Don Keeney, who is with MDA Weather Services. It's going to be pretty significant. It's been dry, and they are not going to get a whole lot of rain. Now, temperatures from Kansas through the Dakotas expected to reach the mid-90s to mid-100s through next week, and above normal readings approaching 100 degrees could reach parts of Nebraska, Missouri, and Iowa in the first half of the next week. We have seen, of course, what persistent heat in the northern plains and lack of rain in the Dakotas has already scorched the spring wheat crop, sending spring wheat futures at the Minneapolis Grain Exchange to a four-year high above $8 a bushel this past week. Who would have thought, with all the supply of wheat in the world and the declining prices, we could see a turnaround this quickly? But as several traders always remind me, and I remind you, when you deal with a weather market, it can go down as quickly as it goes up. But in North Dakota, it's not just spring wheat producers, it's ranchers and cattle farmers as well, because they're running out of feed for their cattle. hay prices doubling, grazing land becoming scarce, just isn't there because it's not raining on those pastures. And as a result, some of the cattle farmers are having to sell their cattle, take them to market earlier than they would originally do. Now, Western Corn Belt states such as Iowa and Nebraska, that's the number one and the number three U.S. corn producers, have escaped major weather stress so far. The Department of Agriculture, Wednesday of this past week, rated 78% of Iowa's corn crop, 75% of the Nebraska crop in good to excellent condition, but soil moisture lacking in portions of those states. And Mark Licht, an Iowa State University Extension agronomist, said it will be a compounded effect in those drier areas. That does equate to a little more impact on the crop. The latest U.S. drought monitor, which is put together by a consortium of climatologists, showed two-thirds of Nebraska and half of Iowa were abnormally dry. Now, the warm-up arrives just as the corn crop is starting to pollinate, and of course, that's the most determining, critical stage for determining yield. And hot and dry conditions during pollination tend to limit yield potential. The month of July is a critical month for corn across the country. The month of August is the critical time for soybeans because that's when, as many folks will say, the crop is made, depending on how much rainfall we get. So those are some of the factors that meteorologists and producers and traders are looking at for the week just ahead. And then there's one more troubling report that came out this week dealing with corn. Corn export sales dropped to a more than three-year low last week. That's according to data released yesterday. Rising competition from big harvests in Brazil and Argentina blunted demand from the world's top exporter, and the sales slump coming even as corn prices have dropped to a seven-week low in the reporting period, suggesting that maybe the global buyers of our corn feel little urgency to lock in import purchases amid record large global supplies. The numbers, according to U.S. Department of Agriculture, importers booked a net 140,275 tons of corn for shipment by the end of August in the week ending June 29th. That's the lowest yet for the 2016-17 marketing year. Combined sales, including 74,516 tons booked for shipment in the upcoming marketing year, were the lowest since June of 2014. Terry Riley, senior commodities analyst with Futures International, said Brazil is starting to steal some business from the U.S. It all goes back to the record second corn crop they grow in South America. And we saw the largest on record in Brazil this year of that second corn harvest. So, golly. South America has been a major competitor in the world soybean market for several years now for U.S. growers. Now it looks like we're going to have to compete against them in corn sales as well. So weather and a slight decline in those exports worth keeping your eye on. I didn't want to mention part of the weekend up in Wisconsin, for those of you who are going up to the Kickapoo Valley at Ontario, which is the headquarters of canoeing down the Kickapoo River. But tonight, on the outdoor stage at the community hall, Tor Ennis and his group of musicians will be putting on a country concert, and I'll be there to add a few Ole and Lena stories as well. And if you're going to be in that part of America's Dairyland, come on down to Ontario on the banks of the Kickapoo. Going to have a good time there. Well, Max Armstrong will talk more about weather and its impact on the market story for American crops. He'll be with us here in part two of the Saturday morning show. But we're at the halfway mark, and that means it's news time at 5:30 on Chicago's very own 720 WGN and WGN.com. Thank you very much, Roger, for that update, and we're here with you until 6 o'clock on WGN Radio Chicago. And among other things, we'll talk about what happened at the G20 summit when President Trump met with the Mexican president, and NAFTA was on the discussion table at that get-together, so we'll get to that a little bit later. And then Max will join us, and one more time, coming up Thursday of next week, Thursday through Sunday, the I and I show at Penfield, Illinois. People come from as far away as Belgium to see that show, so you ought to make the short trip compared to that one and enjoy it yourself. And as we said tonight, at about 7 o'clock, we'll see you on the outdoor stage at the Community Hall in Ontario, Wisconsin. That's the heart of the canoeing country on the Kickapoo River. But right now, we say welcome to Samuelson Says. It's sponsored by Wink Products Company. They are the makers of the specialty cleaning products, and they've been doing it since 1947. And in a moment, we'll talk about something we talk about every time of the at this time of the year.
If you're frustrated by slow drains, or if you find yourself standing in water when you take a shower, the cause could be hair and soap scum buildup. Well, speed up your drains and solve your problem with Wink Hair Clog Blaster. Don't call the plumber. Pick up Wink Hair Clog Blaster instead. Wink Hair Clog Blaster, it does the job for you. Be sure to check out all the products offered by visiting their website at Wink, W-H-I-N-K, Wink.com.
What I am about to share with you, you have heard me say many times at this time of the year. This is my favorite time of the year, summertime, with the outdoor farm equipment shows, the antique tractor shows, the threshermen's reunions, and the commodity festivals. But today, I'd like to focus on county and state fairs, an important part of our rural history and an important part of Americana. Now, many of these fairs are facing financial challenges because of state budget cuts these days. Many of them no longer receive state funds for 4-H and FFA premiums to honor the work that 4-H and FFA kids do. So I would encourage you to support your fair by attending and, if at all possible, volunteering to spend time before and during and after the fair to make things run smoothly. Now, why do I like county fairs? Well, number one, they bring communities together with volunteers that come together to put on the fair. Number two, they are great educational programs for city families who still like to come out and see the farm animals, and kids particularly like to touch the animals at the petting zoos. Fairs offer a great opportunity to educate non-agricultural people about the care given to animals and the concern over producing a quality product. But most of all, it's for the young people on the farm as well as off the farm. This is their Super Bowl or their World Series. It's the culmination of a year of working on 4-H or FFA projects, many of them in projects beyond showing animals, to compete at the county fair or the state fair level and be recognized for their efforts, and then even more importantly, to learn from those efforts. Another way to show your support? Many fairs have auctions of champion livestock, and I would urge you to be a bidder and a buyer to encourage these leaders of tomorrow. So go to a county fair. Go to a state fair. Enjoy the Ferris wheel, the Tilt-A-Whirl, and all the other attractions, but I highly recommend a visit to a judging arena in the livestock show before you leave the fairgrounds. you'll see some of the greatest drama you will ever experience as you watch a 60-pound 12-year-old try to make a 1,200-pound steer behave and show well in front of the judge. Oh, and there is one more reason for my going to the fair this year. I want to see what's the latest food on a stick being featured at the food stands. Seems like every year we add another food category to that food on a stick, and it's always interesting to see what they can come up with. Those are my thoughts on Samuelson Says. Samuelson Says is a presentation of the Tribune Radio Networks. And at 21 minutes before 6 o'clock here on the Saturday morning show, we'll continue and we'll talk markets as Max Armstrong joins us here on the Saturday morning show. Max Armstrong joins us now to talk markets with he's a first-time guest, but he's with a company that we call on frequently for market analysis, Allendale, based in McHenry, Illinois. And Jim McCormick is joining us this morning for the first time, so let's find out what he and Max talked about when they sat down in our studio earlier this week.
That USDA report, that acreage report, that combination acreage and stocks report lived up to its reputation, didn't it, as a fire starter for the market. Generally, we see a lot of volatility coming out of that report, and this year was no exception.
That is correct, Max. We had a very wild report. The trade kind of caught a little bit flat-footed. I mean, they were looking for the bean number to be quite a bit bigger than 90 million, I believe, and they didn't get it. And then for the farmer to plant a million more acres of corn, that definitely was a surprise. I guess the axiom of farmers like to plant corn was true, and they did it. But really caught the market, I think, more than anything, was the reaction. Because the numbers really weren't earth-shattering, but we rallied dramatically. And the big thing, it caught the funds. That's the big thing, I think, that caused that massive reaction on Friday, was the funds are caught short. They were not looking for a bullish reaction or a bullish report. They got caught, and here we go. We're off to the races.
The funds were heavily short, too, were they not?
Correct. In the bean contracts, they were record, biggest short they've ever carried, over about 120,000 contracts. So when that bean report wasn't as bearish as they were projecting, it forced their hand, and they've made a run for the exit. Now, the last couple of days, that rally's continued, but they're still estimated to be short about 60,000 contracts of beans. So if they want out, we've got more upward potential to go.
All right, with that report in the rearview mirror, as we look ahead here, weather seems to be the talk, and that is always the case when you get into the early days of July. But we have at least one very strategic dry pocket right now, don't we?
Yes, the Northern Plains is where the weather is the key right now. The spring wheat is definitely struggling. The crop ratings continue to decline. But a lot of people forget, we grow a lot of corn and beans in that part of the country. Roughly 10% of our corn is produced in that part of the country, as well as about 13, 14% of the beans. So this dry weather we're seeing is shrinking the crop. And what the trade's watching very closely is any signs of that extreme heat that's sitting over the Dakotas might migrate over to the I states and put a drag on those states' yields.
I understand a little bit of Iowa already is dry. Northwest Iowa, southwest Minnesota, I think there's been some concern. And you'll find pockets elsewhere. I know some farmers in Champaign County, Illinois, who said they sure would like to have a rain brought their way.
Yeah, there is pockets pretty much across central Illinois, kind of diagonal across the northwest part of Iowa to the southeast. They're dry. They need some rain. The maps are calling for that part of the country to get rain last week, and it did not materialize. Right now, their maps are trying to hint some of that rain back in there. But, yeah, we need some rain there because we're coming to that critical period of pollination. Our calculations at Allendale suggest that about half this crop will be pollinating right about third week of July, right around July 20th to be exact. And we need the lower temps and a little bit of rain to hit the maximum yield potential.
Is this problem exacerbated at all, Jim, by the fact that we had a ragged start to this season in quite a bit of the Corn Belt? By ragged, I mean the challenge of planting, the difficulty of planting in a timely manner, the need to replant, the fact that when you look at some of these fields, the crops out there are pretty short. And again, I'm talking, basically that 3I League region.
Yeah, I mean, it's critical that these areas have a good yield or pollination because, like you said, they are off to a rough start. A lot of my customers in the Eastern Corn Belt, they think trend yield is at best they can achieve. The idea of above trend yields, they just don't think it's there. too ragged. They worry about nitrogen problems, leaching late in the year. So the market's going to kind of count on the Western Corn Belt, Iowa specifically, and Minnesota to kind of maybe offset the lower yields in the East. And if Iowa kind of misses out on some rains and the heat builds into it, we are going to see the yield drag, and the market's going to get caught flat-footed potentially.
Where are you on your corn yield ideas? What are you thinking about? Are we down into the low 160 range yet?
I don't think we're in a 160 range right now. I'd say it's closer to around a 168 level, a little bit below trend, maybe 165. Our key thing is the temps during the pollination. That is what I like to track. Historically, we have found when you're running 2 to 5 degrees above normal temps during pollination, that's when you're going to see the yield drag. So the next 3 weeks, it's going to be critical. If we warm up, that yield's going to go down, I believe.
So we really need to take a look at that time frame, what, around July 20?
July 20th. Pretty much that is when a bulk of the country we're calculating is going to be hit that 50% pollination mark. So those are the heat numbers. So when we're looking out 8 to 15 days, and the longer range maps are hinting the heat out there in the 8 to 15 day maps, if that comes to fruition, look out. I think you're going to see the market rally.
How hard will it be for the soybean market to get excited about weather challenges in July, knowing, as we've seen so many times in the past, that a good, solid August front coming through, or maybe even a little tropical moisture dumped in, and there's talk about the possibility of the tropics firing up some activity along in August. You know, we know how much of a difference that can make in the bean yield.
Well, yeah, I think, you know, the beans probably won't lead us on the way up. It'll be the corn that leads us the next couple weeks if we turn hot and dry, Max. But what'll happen is the beans will go up. That old line of, you know, rising tides lift all boats. If the funds are buying the wheat based on the drought in the Dakotas. They're buying corn based on, you know, dryness issues potentially in the Midwest. The bean market's going to follow it up also just on sympathy. But like you said, August is going to make or break the beans. We've found customers say, wow, the beans look bad on August 1, and by August 15th, they're shocked at how well the crop looks with one good soaking rain.
At times in the past when we've seen these weather concerns in the market, we have seen overseas buyers getting concerned, and they say, we don't want to get caught flat-footed here. We don't want to get caught without booked supplies. Is there the possibility that we might start to see some of that buying on the basis that we could have a whole different balance sheet?
I think it's something we need to keep an eye on. I don't think they're quite there yet. They feel pretty comfortable, I believe. Brazil's harvesting their second crop. It's a monster crop. Actually, Brazil-Argentina corn crop combined is about 1.6 billion bushels bigger than last year. They're also, you know, in the midst of finishing up a harvest of a record bean crop. So I think the world traders right now feel there's comfortable supplies in the world just yet. But they're going to, you know, they got to be cognizant. It's amazing. Look what the Minneapolis wheat did. I mean, 3 weeks ago, we were dry in the Minneapolis wheat. It wasn't like this drought just came on. It's been a drier bias, but the market exploded when all of a sudden the market kind of panicked. And that could happen at any time. So I don't think they're doing it yet, but it's something we need to keep an eye on, you know, if the maps start to turn hot and dry.
Is there anything left to the upside yet in that spring wheat market?
Oh, yeah, I think there is. That model's continued to be hot and dry. I think, you know, we can have a dollar. You know, we've had spring wheat get up to $10 before on a squeeze play as the people kind of panic. So, yeah, I think you got to, you know, trying to pick a top in that market is very dangerous, plain and simple. But it looks like there's still some upward potential.
Speaking of how quickly things change, isn't it amazing how the sentiment about wheat, and we've talked about this on our broadcast many times, how it goes from a situation of burdensome surpluses to a point where, oh, my goodness, we're wondering about available supplies. It can swing quickly.
It can swing very, very quickly. Like you said, we had a burdensome supply just a year ago. Now we're talking about drawing down on stocks. The prices are getting people attractive. I've had a lot of customers call me just in the last 24 hours saying, hey, what about marketing 2018 wheat already? So it looks like this run-up in wheat's definitely got the producer's attention looking out a year out already.
I saw one economic assessment this week that it would be tough for that that wheat price, taking a look at the hard red winter wheat, for that price to get up above, much above $6, the feeling being that there's just so much wheat yet available from other producing regions of the world.
Well, that's it. What will happen is we're going to get a move up. And like I said, it may get $8, it may hit $10. But if you look historically, when it gets there, it's there for maybe an hour or two, and then it collapses on itself. The one thing about the spring we find interesting is we've had several customers that are telling us, hey, you know, this year's crop's really kind of disappointing, but I have last year's crop. We have a couple customers that have 2 years of wheat sitting in their storage. They've been waiting for this payday. And now they're, you know, we're encouraging them, hey, you've been waiting for it. It worked out. Take advantage of it and move it. So, yes, there is wheat in the world. you know, we've got a decent soft red wheat coming out in the Midwest. The hard red wheat out of Kansas has been a decent crop. So there is not a shortage of wheat. So we got to keep an eye on that also.
That farmer's grain bins, they certainly paid their way in this particular instance, didn't they? And I've heard that protein still really is crucial. I mean, that the millers, they're going to have to come up with the price to get the protein that they want, the protein they've been accustomed to.
Yeah, pretty much, yeah. The protein has been the big discussion point, not there. If you are a producer and you have good protein, you're in the driver's seat right now because it's definitely a shortage of the protein content right now.
A farmer is always going to look at what's going on, especially with experiences of the past, and say, oh, I don't want to miss the train. I don't want to miss the opportunity. Obviously, I want to sell at the best price that I can. Do you have that conversation often?
I have that a lot, especially nowadays. I mean, the last couple of years, plain and simple, Max, the balance sheets have been very tight. The economic situation has been very tight for the producers. We needed something to get this market excited, to get producers profitable. The wheat's now making a nice run, and it's getting to people in some pretty profitable levels. And hopefully that'll pull this corn market up toward that 420 to 440 level. But we're encouraging guys, hey, you know, look where you were just a few years ago, a few months back. Look where we were last fall going into August. We had corn trading below $3 in the cash market. So we're telling guys, when you have that opportunity to book profits, take some of that money and, take it off the table and book it.
A great elevator owner told me the other day, he said, man, my phone really heated up after that USDA report. I would imagine yours did, too.
Yes, it did. It finally got – the producer's excited, finally. I mean, we were really kind of in the doldrums. The corn market, for the most part, has been stuck in about a six-month range, just about a 15, 20-cent range. And, you know, when the market kind of shook off a bearish report and rallied, it kind of is getting people's attention. And we're getting levels, like I said, we've hit the $4 level. That kind of broke some corn free. I'm thinking, you know, 409 will break some more free. And I have a lot of producers that if we get up toward that 420, 440 zone, they are definitely, we're encouraging to, buy puts or sell futures or get some of it marketed in the cash market.
Jim, thanks for sharing your comments with us. We certainly appreciate it.
Thank you for having me on.
Our first-time market analyst from Allendale, Jim McCormick. Allendale based in McHenry, Illinois, and our thanks to Jim, and he'll be back with us sometime before the end of the crop year. I mentioned at the top of the show that President Trump has been busy holding private meetings in Hamburg, Germany, at that G20 summit. Of course, his most notable meeting was yesterday with President Putin of Russia. But before that, he met his Mexican counterpart, President of Mexico, Enrique Peña Nieto. And he was accompanied by his foreign minister, Luis Videgaray, who said he expects talks on renegotiating NAFTA to start on the 16th of August, the earliest possible date. Well, we will talk a little bit about what they had to say at that gathering yesterday in Hamburg, Germany, when we continue here on the Saturday Morning Show. The meeting with President Trump, meeting for the first time, the president of Mexico, basically talked about trade. There were other subjects, however, and officials were quick to stress that the talks between the two presidents had been productive, despite Trump repeating that Mexico would pay for his planned border wall. And the president said, we're negotiating NAFTA and some other things with Mexico, and we'll see how it all turns out. But I think that we've made very good progress. And in response to a shouted question from a reporter about whether he still wants Mexico to pay for the border wall, which aims to keep out illegal immigrants, Trump said, absolutely. The president of Mexico talked about the strong dialogue on NAFTA, while his aides emphasized that they had not discussed the wall. But NAFTA, which has impacted American farmers a great deal positively because of the enhanced trade that's happened since back in the early 90s when President Clinton signed it into law. NAFTA underpins more than $1 trillion worth of trilateral trade between the United States, Mexico, and Canada. And the minister who was accompanying the Mexican president told reporters afterwards it had been a big part of the conversation with President Trump. He said, "We expect to have a meaningful, constructive modernization of the NAFTA agreement that is good for the three nations, and we think there is a lot of room to make it a better agreement for the three nations." So the other topic, the migrant labor that comes across the border, thousands of them every day coming across the border to harvest produce crops here in the United States. And so they are apparently, according to what they talked about yesterday, going to work on that immigration for labor activity that takes place between the two countries. Trump has threatened to impose punitive tariffs on Mexican goods to protect U.S. industry and to pull out of NAFTA altogether if he cannot rework it in the United States' favor. However, especially since President Trump stepped back from initiating the process of withdrawal in April, Mexican officials are saying that business leaders from the NAFTA nations have increasingly come together around a shared desire to keep the agreement alive. American agricultural producers would certainly like to do that, but that remains to be seen. So anyway, that's along with weather, that's on the agricultural conversation list, and we'll continue to cover those stories here on WGN Radio. As always, we thank Bob Ferguson for hitting the right switches at the right time so that we can do this every Saturday morning. We thank you for joining us and staying with us here on the agricultural discussion, which I still call the most basic and important industry in the United States, in the world. If you can't eat, you can't produce much of anything else. So thanks for listening. I'm Orion Samuelson.
Orion Samuelson keeps you connected to the world of business and agriculture on WGN. Hear his reports weekday mornings on The Steve Cochran Show and during the noon hour on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Plus, catch Orion and Max on Saturday mornings at 5 a.m. only on Chicago's WGN Radio 720.